Hey everyone, James LaBrie from Dream Theater, and you're listening to or watching the podcast Talking Into Infinity with JT and Brian. Enjoy this. These guys are extremely informative. I love their dialogue. I love their interpretation of the songs, who and what we are, what we were going after. They're very accurate in their interpretations and descriptions, and I just think this is a great show, and these guys are doing a stand-up stellar job. So once again, enjoy Talking Into Infinity with JT and Brian.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 13 of Talking Into Infinity, a Dream Theater podcast. I'm your host, John. We are live at talkingintoinfinity.com and the cmsnetwork.com. Remember, the show airs every other Thursday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here, wherever you are watching. If you want to jump into the chat and be a part of the conversation, please go onto our YouTube page or the CMS Network YouTube page, and you can type stuff up. We'll bring you up, and you can actually be a part of the show. So always a good time. If you hate us, if you love us, just tell us. Get a part of the discussion. So without further ado, let me bring on my esteemed co-host, Mr. Brian Hendrickson. Brian, what is up, man? How are you doing?
I'm doing awesome. It's been 2 weeks. I know that because we're doing a show.
Always with the 2 weeks thing, man.
Yeah, I've got it down now. But yeah, we are talking about a kind of a semi-controversial album, I guess. Train of Thought is going to be on tap today. And I'm very interested to see the thoughts from you. And we do have a special guest. I'll let you go ahead and introduce him.
Yeah, so I would like to introduce a good friend of mine. He is actually the brother of a musician friend of mine. I play in Cleveland. This dude plays in Mansfield. And his name is Jeremy Allen, but this is his brother, Tommy. And he and I have talked Dream Theater for a long time. And I found out that his favorite record was Train of Thought. So I was like, when we do the deep dive, you got to come on. And so we're doing the deep dive for Train of Thought. So here he is, my buddy, Tommy Allen. What's up, man? Thanks
How's
for coming on the show.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
Anytime, anytime. So real quick, like, get into, like, how did you become a Dream Theater fan? So where's your fan cred here?
Okay, so I got into them really late. Believe it or not, I didn't get into them until like 98. So they were like almost 10 years into their career. But I remember seeing Pull Me Under on Headbangers Ball back in, was that 92? I think it was 91, 92. And I was just like, you know, they're okay, whatever. So I just never gave them a second thought. And then a buddy of mine said that, oh no, you got to get into these guys, whatever. So I went to CD and tape outlet here in Mansfield, which is now closed. And I bought Once in a Lifetime. That was my very first CD. And fell in love with them. I started, well, I bought Falling Into Infinity after that. Then I bought Six Degrees, and then just bought everything they've ever made after that. DVDs, side projects, whatever I could get a hold of.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's funny. Like, I told the story on the show, but that's exactly what I did. I a little bit different from you, but I saw Pull Me Under on MTV. I'm like, oh my God, what is this? And it's like, it got me hooked, but I couldn't catch the band name. So I was running around looking for like stuff like Kicks and Trickster. I'm like, they're these long-haired guys, and it's 92, so it's got to be like, and boy, was I wrong. So yeah, kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So to start things off tonight, I want to show something off here real fast. So this is my, since we are, you know, a prog metal show, I kind of got to show off. I got the Operation Mindcrime Deluxe box set and 2 LP remaster this week. I'm super pumped to dig into it and watch it. It's got like 3 professionally shot shows from that tour and everything. So, if you're into Queensryche, if you're into that record especially, like the box set's like $65, and it's got all kinds of stuff on it. So go check that out. If you just want the album, it's $26. So
that's not bad.
Yeah, totally worth it. So we do have a little bit of Dream Theater news before we get into tonight's topic, and it actually is Train of Thought related. The Lost Not Forgotten Archives, they announced this week that it might have been last week, but it was very recent in any case. We do the show how often, Brian? Every 2 weeks?
Every 2 weeks, yes.
But But the next release from the Lost Not Forgotten Archives is going to be the Train of Thought Instrumental Demos. Weird on this one because, like, usually those releases have, like, a whole bunch of extra stuff, but this is literally just the seven songs in instrumental form, in demo form. So is this something that interests you guys? Like, is this something you would go out and get? Like, where do you stand on this?
Well, For me, it seems like a weird thing to put on vinyl, I'll be brutally honest. I mean, it might be cool to hear it, you know, in digital form and stuff, but I don't know that that's something I'd want on vinyl. But this is
okay. This
is Tommy's baby, this album. So what do you think about that?
I am not into the instrumental stuff. I want to hear vocals. I want to hear, you know, because I bought all the like limited editions, special editions of some of their CDs, and a lot of times the extra CD is the instrumental, and I just never play it. I mean, could get into it.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do it just because, like, I'm trying to collect, like, my favorite albums on vinyl just because it's, like, a collection I can actually keep track of. It's not going to ever grow, you know? So
yeah.
I think it'd just be cool to have. But in terms of, like, listenability, I think I'm kind of with you. I'm kind of torn because on one hand, it's like, you know, when Metallica puts out their sets and their special releases, there's like 150 tracks of like demo stuff. And it's like, well, how many versions of the same song can you hear? Mm-hmm. But by the same token with this one, it's like just one version of each song. You're like, I think I might have liked to have a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Like I'm as a completionist, I might actually dig it. But, you know, so, you know. Hey, what's up? Rock and Roll Podcast says what's up. What's up, man? Thanks for tuning in. Appreciate you, man. How you doing?
Awesome.
So, all right. So, let's dig into this. Tommy, this is your favorite album.
Mm-hmm.
I have an interesting relationship with this album because for me, this was the last immediate listen of one of their records that I had until The Astonishing. So mm-hmm. the records between Train of Thought and The Astonishing, I enjoyed, but I was like, yeah, this is cool. Train of Thought was the last one I was like immediately like yes, this is all right, mm-hmm. you know. And then the rest of them I had to listen to a little bit. So it's kind of unique for me. Where do you stand on this one, Brian? Or where did you stand before, you know, we dug into it?
Well, you know what? My mind has changed on this substantially. I've become more of a fan of this album. But what I do want to do just quickly before we go into this is I want to set the stage for the music, the hard rock metal landscape for 2003. So
I forgot about that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. No biggie. So obviously there's hundreds of rock and metal albums released every year. I tried to go through and get, you know, basically the ones that we all would kind of know and just maybe have a quick comment on. So basically the biggest, most controversial album of all time by the biggest metal band on the planet. They were done loading. They were done reloading. They'd been forgiven. They'd been unforgiven. they'd been re-forgiven for being unforgiven. They'd unloaded. Metallica, Saint Anger, 2003. Was there ever an album that you anticipated the release of more and were let down more?
Yeah, Load.
Yeah.
Okay.
Saint Anger for me. I actually bought the album, listened to it, and I gave it away because of the snare drum. Sound like he was hitting a metal trash can. I can't. I just couldn't do it. Listen to it.
And you're a drummer, Tommy, so that had to hit home
right.
for you.
Yes.
Even more.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. I actually. I would say I was more disappointed in Load because it was coming off the Black album and that's when they were still kicking ass. So when you go into, you know, vintage Metallica to Load, you're like, oh my God, what is this? But going into Saint Anger, you were just like, all right, they've sucked for two records. This is probably going to be crap again. And I think I even got you beat, Tommy, because like, I listened to each song, maybe about a minute and a half. I couldn't get through more than that. And I'll never forget, I was selling tickets. My local band was playing, and I was selling tickets, and I had to go deliver tickets to a guy my dad worked with, and he had two little kids that love coming to the show. And the littlest kid, he was 8 years old. He says to me, hey, man, did you hear the new Metallica album? And I went, yeah, I actually have it. I got the special edition with the DVD and stuff. He's like, oh, man, I'm so jealous. I'm trying to buy it, but I got to save up my allowance. And I said, how much do you have? And he's like, I only have like $8. And I went, all right, I'll sell you mine for $8. And he went, really?
Wow.
And I said, yeah. And his dad went, are you serious? And I said, yeah. The kid goes running in the house, comes out with literally a sack of change, like eight. I didn't even care. He could have just handed me an empty sack. I would have given the bastard away. But it was like $8. And he was like, are you sure? I'm like, yeah, take this thing. Like, and I sold Saint Anger to an 8-year-old kid for a sack of change. I hated it that much.
But did you listen to the mix on the DVD version, though?
Yes, dude.
It sounds so much better.
It does. All my radio buddies around here, when they were playing that stuff on their shows, they were using that mix because it sounded better than the actual album.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Full disclosure, so I went back, I believe, about four different times, because I thought, you know, maybe this isn't that bad. You know, I still do have the CD. I never did get rid of it, but I would just, there's three albums that I go back and I just give another chance, and I still, one of them's Van Halen 3.
You know, the Gary,
because I'm always like, well, and there is some interesting, cool guitar stuff going on, but it's just not Van Halen for me, you know. And I just tried, and I was like, and the other one is the Motley Crue with Karabi. You know, some people worship that album. I tried and tried, and I just can't. But anyway, well, I'll keep moving down the list. So second one is my all time favorite Anthrax album with John Bush. We've Come For You All. Love
excellent
the production
record
on that.
Yes. Yes.
Cadillac Rock Box, Taking the Music Back. I love those tunes. Yep. Number three, John will probably remember this one, Seven Dust Seasons.
Yes. That is another, such an underrated record, man. Ah.
Also, Queensryche Tribe. Do we have a Crickets sound effect to play for that one?
I actually like that one.
Listen,
I saw them with Dream Theater, and that was that tour.
Okay,
I actually kind of like that album a little bit.
Well, we'll still keep you on the rest of the episode anyway.
Your credibility might just take an
hit.
Oh no.
Probably my favorite live release by this band, Rush in Rio. The DVD for that is amazing.
Oh yeah,
yes.
Iron Maiden, Dance of Death. I'm kind of on that one.
The comeback records, I think that's the strongest.
Okay. Another one, John's band's Black Label Society, Blessed Hell Ride.
Yeah. Funeral Bell. Oh, gug, 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 gug. Yeah. It's great.
Here's a controversial one. Darkness, Permission to Land. I love that band. I think they're extremely talented. They're quirky in what they do, but they actually can write and play.
I love playing I believe in the thing called Love for My Wife, because when he goes to those high parts,
right,
she just cringes. She's like, oh, and then I made her watch the video, you know, with him crawling across the bed and stuff. She's like, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? Yeah.
Also the debut from Dragon Force, Valley of the Damned. I love Dragon Force.
Yep.
Perfect Circle, 13th Step, one of John's favorite bands.
Yes. Talented, but not my thing.
Yeah. And the best-selling album for 2003, drumroll, 50 Cent, Get Rich or Die Trying.
somehow, I know we're going to be talking a lot of Dream Theater here in a few seconds. Somehow, I think that's the last time 50 Cent is going to be mentioned in this episode.
Yeah,
I just got a feeling.
Yeah.
It probably is, but yeah, it's like kind of not the greatest year for music coming out, you know. I mean obviously some highlights there were the Anthrax and the Seven Dust and probably the Russian Maiden and Black Label, but yeah, not a lot of great stuff out there. It didn't look like that year. What am I missing, John?
Our buddy Gibson Les Paul brings up an awesome album, the brilliant Nevermore. Enemies of Reality was 2003. Very good call. That's a kick-ass album.
That actually was on one of my other lists, but I'd narrowed it down. So, yeah, that is a great album.
Yeah, very good call, Gibson. So, appreciate that. By the way, Tommy Molina says he loves the podcast. Thank you very much, man. I appreciate the kind words. Thanks for tuning in. Appreciate it. All right, well, why don't we get into the meat and potatoes of what we're doing here. So, another one of our album deep dives. And as I said in the show description, we are digging into, arguably, if not indisputably, Dream Theater's heaviest album, Train of Thought. Tommy, we'll start with you. This is your favorite record. Do you think this is their heaviest album? Because I've heard some people dispute between this and Six Degrees.
This to me is the heaviest one. I mean, it's the metal side of Dream Theater from first song to the last song. Even the instrumental, which starts out kind of weak, ends up being metal. And and that's why I love it so much, because that's why Dream Theater, the biggest reason why I love them is because of their metal side. And this album I've played over and over and over again. I mean, I just can't get enough of it.
So full disclosure, as we said earlier in the show, this is your favorite Dream Theater album, and you're a huge fan. Why is this your favorite record? You know, they've got 14 other studio albums. Why is this one, you know, the top for you?
It's that metal. I mean, it's just, that's what I love about them. And you know, in all their other albums, they always have that metal edge to them, that metal element. But with this album, it's nonstop. The metal doesn't stop. There's not a lot of, you know, Jordan going off on some, which I love Jordan's keyboard solos and stuff, but even his keyboard solos have a heavy edge to it.
Yep.
The other albums, you know, he goes into like an organ sound or some other sounds, but this one, I mean, he almost at certain points, he almost think it's Petrucci playing guitar, and it's Jordan playing keyboard, because his keyboard sounds like a guitar. And I just love that. Just love that.
What did they call it in the Systematic Chaos, the bonus DVD of the making? They call it the Dirty Pig. The distorted keys, they call it like Dirty Pig or something. So Brian, this one for you, as we talked about it previously, you were not that big of a fan of this album, but it seems like you may have changed your mind a little bit digging into this one for this episode.
Yeah, well, I've been digging. I actually dug into it twice because we did our cage match or whatever also. And I had been listening, kind of re-going back and listening to everything also just once we started the show again. But, yeah, you know, I guess my biggest complaint on this is there is a lack of, being a keyboard player, there's not as much keyboards as I would like. But I think there's a lack of melody just overall. And that's okay when stuff is super duper heavy, but to me, my absolute favorite parts of Dream Theater are when it's heavy, crunchy, with a great riff, and there's a great melody on top of it. And I just don't think there's a lot of huge, especially vocal-wise, there's not a lot of big, fat, you know, vocal melodies on this album. But again, it's a super brutal, heavy album, and that's how they wanted it to be. The parts Jordan does get to shine on, I think, come across pretty well. And let's get into it and just go track by track.
Let's do it. I'm going to disagree with you throughout. I actually think that there's a lot of melody, and it counterpoints the heaviness and the stark, just bleak kind of feel of the album. You know, Rock and Roll Podcast, he says, this album is my favorite from them. So heavy. Good call there. And Mike M is giving a spoiler. On my notes, the middle section of Endless Sacrifice is just totally insane in the best way possible. You are not wrong, and we will get into that once we get to that song, because I completely agree with you. But as you said, Brian, let's start from the top. As I Am, I got notes, obviously, because I always like to write some stuff down for the, you know, what we're doing here. I just think that, you know, they had said in interviews before this album came out that they were trying to write something heavy. They were trying to write a metal album. And when this song kicks off, I think you're like, okay, this song, to me, it sets the tone. I think you know what's coming based on As I Am. You're like, okay, it's like, it's, you know, it's a straightforward song, but it just drives. And the production kind of hits you immediately. It's a very dry production to me. But it is definitely like crunchy, and it's way in your face, and it's just, you know what you're going to get by listening to As I Am, at least to me. That's what I got out of it.
Now, did you notice that the beginning of As I Am, it is the ending to the last song in Six Degrees?
Yeah. How many of those did they do? Because I know the end of In the Name of God on this one leads into Root of Evil. And I think Octavarium ended that. So I think it was four albums in a row, wasn't it? It was Scenes from a Memory, Six Degrees, Train of Thought, and Octavarium, wasn't it? And they did that like the fade out, fade in thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, we'll get into this later, but you know, the 12-step suite continues here and everything. But I mean, so what do you think, Tommy, about As I Am?
I love the, of course, being a drummer, I'm going to notice the drums first, but the, the China and, and the snare, and then John Myung's harmonics on the bass to sound, you know, to start the song. I love the intro to that song. It just, it just catches you, you know, it catches your ears, and it's just awesome.
Yeah. What do you think, Brian?
Yeah, it's a great album opener. We talked before about some of our favorite album openers. This is a great album opener. It would be a great set opener. I think it's probably my favorite song on the whole album. I wish the rest of the album had more of this. I don't even know what the word is for this. For the I like the vocals on this. I think the vocal melody on this song the best out of all of them. But yeah, just a heavy driving song. It gets to the point pretty quick after those intros and stuff, and just a great song.
I think what's interesting on this one, and we talked about this on a previous episode, Brian, but I mean, Tommy, this is one of those songs like, you know, Dream Theater's known for these long songs, and this one feels nice and concise. Like you're like, all right, it's like a 4 or 5 minute banger, but this one's like 7.5, 8 minutes long, and you're like, what the hell? Like, you don't realize it's that long because it's written so well.
Right.
You know? One of the other things that stood out to me was in the solo section, there's just squealies everywhere. And that's just like the guitar nerd in me. But anytime it's just like squeals and pinch harmonics and stuff like that, it's just like, oh my God, it's like, it sounds so cool. And it's like I say, a lot about this song just sets the tone, you know, the crunch, all the squealies and stuff. And, you know, I'm going to disagree with you, Brian. You bring up the hook in As I Am. I think there's a lot of hooks in the rest of the record. And I think that kind of, you know, is, you know, As I Am, I will agree with you, is probably the best of them. But I think it does set the tone, like, okay, this is going to be a really heavy record, but you're not going to miss those choruses. You know, it's not like they're not memorable. There's nothing memorable coming, you know, vocally. And the solo, again, it sets the table. It's just a complete shred solo pretty much all the way through. And you're like, yep, you're basically going to get your face ripped off by this record.
Like, right. Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's, and you said, Brian, like, it's a great album opener. It's a great show opener. We saw, you know, they opened with this. When did we see them that they opened with this? It was one of the tours we saw they opened with it. We're like, yeah, like.
Did you see them in Columbus at Newport? That's where I saw them on this tour.
I saw on this tour. I saw them in Cleveland because this. Okay. This was, yeah, because that was. I don't know what. No, that was 6 Degrees. And Train of Thought. Actually, Train of Thought, I saw them in Cleveland at the Agora.
And okay.
I was trying to find video of this, but this is the infamous story where I saw them at Madison Square Garden and blew the chance to solo live on stage with Mike Portnoy, not knowing it was filmed and it was released with his instructional drum DVD. So this is like my huge life's regret tour. So. Yeah. So, all right. So moving on to track two, This Dying Soul. Brian, what do you got?
Yeah. I love the pedaling Egyptian sounding riffs to start. You know, it's super heavy. And then Petrucci goes to that clean tone, which balances it out. You get the, it's kind of funny because it goes back to what Tommy was saying. So Jordan finally gets a solo, right? But what do? They make the keyboard sound as much like a guitar as humanly possible. Yeah. So you can barely even tell it's him. You know, it sounds, it's like a distorted metal guitar sound. It's cool. I like it. You know, you got the little piano breakdown part. The coolest thing of interesting, I don't know if you guys noticed this, he goes through almost like four different voices. And at one point he's got the cadence going on Blackened. And at the same time, after that, he's got a Dave Mustaine thing going, which is like almost the ultimate irony. It's like he's singing Blackened and a Megadeth song, you know, in addition to his own style earlier, and it's almost like that talking like rap type thing he does too. And so there's like these seven different, you know, shades of Labrie on this song that are kind of cool. But yeah, this is I really do like this song. I think it's a great tune.
Right. What about you, Tommy?
Again, being a drummer, the double kick that Portnoy's doing. Yeah. It's just, and As I Am is a heavy song, but they go into that song and it's heavier than the last song.
Yeah.
And I agree with Brian. The Labrie is doing all these different things with his voice and sounding different. And there again, another song that just absolutely blew me away from start to finish.
Yep. My very first note on this one is now the album really kicks in. You know, it's like, it's almost like, you know, As I Am was the salad before the steak.
Mm-hmm.
And man, as soon as
right,
like, oh shit, here we go, you know?
Right.
And you know, like I say, like, you know, there's a double solo section that starts the song. So it's like, it's just starts out like obnoxiously musical. And then it goes into like, you know, the mellow part. And
didn't it that part remind you of Scenes from Memory?
Yes.
That sound, that Egyptian or Indian type. It was almost that same sound.
Yeah.
To me.
I actually have that as a note.
Yeah.
And I'm glad, Brian, you brought it up, because I figured you would, because I know you always notice those types of sounds and whatnot.
Yeah, this whole album really is a lot of that pedaling, you know, using that mode. And I always go back to the ultimate song that I think basically maybe 500 or 2000 metal songs came after. And that's Rainbow's Gates of Babylon. Like, if it was not for that song, you would never have half of these kind of songs that you end up with later, because it's just a really cool way of riffing, you know, and playing in that style. And I feel like that style is kind of basically what just the meat and potatoes of this album. And it's always a way of making something sound heavy is going back to that style.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, this song is just, it's always one of my favorites of theirs. I love this song. One of the cool things I think they do, and they kind of do this a lot on this record. I didn't realize it till I really dug into it, you know, doing research for this episode. But I call it the bullhorn vocals, like, you know, there's a lot of that. And I really like that. It's, if you're going to make, if they're like, we're just going to come out and make a heavy record, like, F you, this is just nothing but heavy. Like, that's a way to add to the heaviness, you know, because LaBrie is a very melodic singer.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you dirty up his vocal, I think that just adds to it. You know, it's
right.
I love that they did that. I don't know where you guys stand on that, but what do you guys think about that?
Oh, I liked it. I liked it. And if I remember right, when I saw them do it live, LaBrie had a green light, so he almost looked like the Hulk.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love it.
And
yeah,
he had just, you know, he's kind of just glaring at the crowd, you know.
Yep.
And yeah.
He had the evil look.
Right.
Yeah, it's a cool effect, you know, and the reason they obviously do that is if he tried to sing, you know, that growly, raspy, you know, you don't want to destroy your throat. So that kind of helps you get a little bit of that, you know, but he can do like his cool, angry phrasing and stuff into that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it definitely heavies everything up for sure.
Yeah. They never really did that too much before, if at all. And so when they really leaned on it for this one. I really thought it was cool. Brian, like, here's one for you. I have a note. It says, the keyboard parts in the verses kind of sound like bugs. It's like all that tinkly high, like, you know, like I was like, digga, 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 like, you know, like I was like, that's really interesting. Like, as much as Jordan is not prevalent on this album, the stuff that you hear, like, he's doing some really unique things that he never really does on other records.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's hard to tell sometimes, like Tommy was saying, what is keyboards and what is guitar and how many effects are on what and what's being played. And I think he does his best to try to, you know, to try to add to this. I don't think it was an easy album for him to make by any stretch. And he'll probably be the first one to admit that. He probably has multiple times, I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, he said it, you know, in the biography that it was like, he really didn't know where he fit because they just got in a room.
Yeah.
You know, they like live. I mean, you know, it's not like Tommy, they just faced each other. I mean, there's footage of it on YouTube. You can look up, if you look up Train of Thought Making Of, and they just faced each other with everything turned up to 11 in a room and just started blasting. And he's like, well, that's not really, you know, conducive to writing melodic keyboard parts or adding your stuff, 'cause you're just getting your face smashed. You know,
like, well, they made up for it. They made up for it in Octavarium, though, because he's all over that album. And if you turn the CD over, there's keyboard keys.
Yep.
On the back.
Yep.
So they made up for it.
Sorry, Jordan. Here's your album.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So, I like, dude, in this one, the heavy breakdown and that sweet pick riff that they do is like, man, it's just, this song is just, it's, you know, once they get to that breakdown, it's a very unrelenting song. It's just like continually getting punched in the face, mm-hmm. like as it keeps going. And it's like, again, like I say, like, you know, back to my original note on this song, like, now the record really kicks in.
Right.
It's like, this is, here it comes. This is heavy Dream Theater, whether you like it the F or not.
Right.
So, you know, and, you know, I mean, another great solo section, Jordan and Petrucci both shredding, which seems to be kind of like where do you guys stand on this? Because I kind of felt like it was kind of a repetitive theme on the album, and not in a bad way, but it kind of seems like there, you know, there's a Jordan riff, then a John riff. There's a Jordan riff, then there's a John riff. And it's all like kind of like very active, you mm-hmm. know?
I never really noticed that, but you're probably right. I'll have to, when I listen to it again, I'll listen to that. But I never really thought about that.
Yeah, I noticed it as kind of like a pattern, because I was like, oh, that's awesome. And then I'd get to the next song and it would happen again. And I was like, and when I noticed it, I heard the first solo, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's great. And then I get to, I think it's, you know, started here. And then I think it was, you know, Endless Sacrifice. I'm like, oh, cool, they did it again. And then I started listening for it. And then I was like, well, damn, like they kind of do that solo section thing.
All right.
So, yeah, like. All right, so you guys got anything else on this Dying Soul before we move on?
Nope.
All right. So track 3, Endless Sacrifice. I don't have a lot here, so I'll let you start this one off, Tommy. What do you got for Endless Sacrifice?
Love it. Absolutely love it. And it's one of those songs that, of all the Dream Theater songs that I can't play, which is 95% of them, I can play parts of Endless Sacrifice. I love the groove. It's very straightforward, but I love the groove to this song. I really, really do.
Yeah. Brian?
This one I'm not such a big fan of. I like the piano part that comes in on the second part of that beginning verse, and then you got the string parts behind it. To me, I just don't hear hardly any melody in this song. It's 11 and a half minutes. I think it's just too much. I don't think this is enough of a substantial riff to what I consider Dream Theater, you know, that grabs me to milk for that long. So I don't know. And then in the middle, they go into that chugging dissonant thing where I sometimes feel like, oh, this is a bailout. Let's go to this, because we're still stretching this out. And I just, the song for me, it doesn't work. It's not one of my favorites.
You know, I would have to agree with you, Brian. I think for the type of song that it is, it's a little bit too long. I think there's too many solos and stuff for the type of song that it is. You lose the feeling of what the song is about because they extend it out a little bit too long for me.
It's hard.
Let's see if John disagrees here. Wait a minute. Yeah, is he going to disagree?
I can agree on the length, but I have a hard time getting completely on board with both you guys, because the middle part, when the speed kicks in, the rest of that is just awesome. So it's like, I can't say it's too long, because it's like, you know, you could say, I guess it drags a little bit in the slower parts in the beginning. But then again, you know, like I said, you get to the middle part and it goes. And I'm like, just keep going, dude. Like, I'm so into that part of the song that it's like, I don't notice that it's 11 and a half minutes long. And I think it's because you've got several minutes of like the slower stuff, and so you're used to that. But then when the tempo changes and whatnot, and then it kicks in, you're like, oh my god, it's like you're kind of like, oh, it's a whole new song almost. So it's kind of like refreshes you. And I will, the only thing I would say, Brian, to your comment about the melody is that I think the vocal melody itself is catchy, and I think it would be catchier with a bigger instrumental underneath it. Because, you know, endless sacrifice. Like, those are catchy notes. Like, you can get it in your head like that. But if it wasn't...
Yeah, it's like, just not enough of a riff for me. You know, I think there's you're missing like a phrase and a half or something in that to really just fatten it up and make it a little bit bigger. I don't know.
Yeah. Gibson Les Paul says, Endless Sacrifice has a catchy chorus, but it takes way too long to get there. I think they get into it pretty quickly. I just, you know, Gibson, but I think, again, like I said, I think it's the riff underneath it doesn't lend itself to this big melodic thing, whereas I think if you just isolate the vocal and write something different under it, you could make a massive chorus out of that. I've always thought that, like, because I find myself singing along to that one, and then underneath, I'm like, are we still in the verse, like, writing-wise? Like, did LaBrie jump the gun and sing the chorus in the verse? Like, what's going on here? Like, I've always thought that about this song, you know? One of my favorite things they've ever done is actually in this song, that the panned keyboard solo part, like, you know, left, right, left, right, yeah. Like the isolated Jordan thing.
Yep.
I just think that's cool as hell. It's like all different sounds, and it's like you over here, then you're over there, like you're over here. Like, I just think that's so cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured you would like that as a keyboard player, Brian. I'm surprised you didn't mention that.
No, sonically, it sounds cool. I just don't, to me, it's just, and here's that catch 22 thing with Dream Theater. Like, okay, we know they can go into a room and literally churn out, you know, just churn out song after song after song if they're just going to just riff like that. But, you know, but sometimes they'll come out more like this where it's more of a jam and there's not so many, you know, catchy, you know, different melodies and stuff going on. So it's like you're going to get both sides of it. And they're, you know, both, and people like both sides of that as well. But I think this is just one of those more where they're just milking something a little bit too long. And kind of stuff just sort of just throwing it in there. And, you know, I just don't think it's one of their stronger songs personally.
So as your favorite song, Tommy, and you agreed with Brian about it being like too long. Is this for you the weakest track on the album? I mean, I think obviously you go to Vacant. I think it's a little obvious. So leaving yes. Vacant out because it's just kind of like a palate cleanser.
Right.
Is this, would you go to this as like kind of like your... If you had to skip one song on the record, would this be it?
I don't think I could skip any song on this album. I really, that Vacant would probably be the only one that I would.
Okay.
I mean, even though it's really long, I think it's too long. I'm not going to skip it. I'm going to listen to the whole thing. I mean, okay.
I think if I had a skip moment on this album, maybe the slow part of the beginning, like the first few minutes of this song, but I can't even say that I would because it's a different kind of,
it sets a mood.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's a perfect way to say it. Like, you know, you got As I Am, which is a straightforward rocker, you know? And then you've got like just the kind of like, you know, just the in your face kind of, you know, really heavy chug of This Dying Soul, and then you get into like the mellow parts and stuff like that. Like, I think this album is like, it's one thing I noticed, like, it's laid out really well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like like I was just saying, you get the rocker, then you get the really heavy one, then you know, Endless Sacrifice comes in for a few minutes and it's kind of like melodic and a little more mellow, and then it gets back into the heavy. Like, it's, they laid it out very intelligently, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, that this one is, I think this is probably like the perfect place on the album to put it when you look mm-hmm. at stuff. All right, so let's get to Honor Thy Father. And since we have a drummer on the podcast, and this starts out with what I think is the coolest, like one of the single coolest drum parts in Dream yes. Theater history.
Right, yeah.
So
without a doubt.
I will let you lead this one off, Tommy. Honor Thy Father, what do you got?
Probably my... one of my favorites on the album. I mean, it's so just brutal and in your face. The lyrics, I mean, it's like, you know, James is flipping the bird to all the people that had pissed him off in the past.
Yep.
And, you know, they say some, just in case my kids are watching, they're saying some, you know, he says the F word, you know, that you rarely hear James say, you know, yep. And it's like, you know, yeah, you know, I just love this song. I get into it every time I listen to it. And I have Mike Portnoy's instructional DVD where he shows how to play it and the camera's right on him. And it's just like, oh yeah, this is
yep.
just incredible. Just incredible.
Did you learn it? Cause I did. Like I play drums as well, not in a band, but
yeah.
I had to learn it. And so this is like one of the rare things I could do. I would pull it out in band practice and my guys were yeah. like, what the hell?
Yeah.
When did you learn it? I'm like, and it's like, oh, I'm a one trick pony, dude. Like,
yeah, I can. That's another song. I can play it until they get into the jamming parts.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, because I love all the off time stuff that's going on.
Yep.
But I it took me a while, but I taught myself how to play that that beginning, and it's so fun. It's so fun.
How cool is it? And I didn't realize this. I'm not very musically inclined. Like, I play in bands and stuff, but I'm not trained like, you know, you and Brian are. Like, I did not notice this until I was watching some stuff online last night, and Portnoy and Petrucci were talking about it as they're writing this riff, and he was like, do you realize that your hi-hat is actually the upbeat? And I thought about it. I'm like, oh, my God. And I was doing it today, and it's like, yeah, like, the hi-hat's actually the upbeat. And I'm like, my God, that is so cool.
Yeah.
is like unbelievable. Like, you know, and to your point, like the lyrics, you know, Portnoy actually wrote these about his stepfather, and he had to answer a bunch of questions. I remember in interviews, like, mm-hmm. people were like, oh my God, like, are you pissed at your dad? He's like, no, this is my stepdad. Like, my real dad, like, is fine.
Right.
Like, people thought that he had like family problems with his father mm-hmm. because of this song.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Like, no. So, yeah, that drum intro is like, you know, and honestly, my next note to exactly what you were saying, Tommy, is some of the most aggressive Dream Theater lyrics ever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's pretty, you know, and the off groove, like I said, the hi-hat with the upbeat, I mentioned that. Like, it's just, this song just kicks ass.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so what do you think, Brian? I mean, this is generally not the kind of song you would really, I think this song is really underrated. I don't know where you stand on that, but.
I will agree. Vocals and riff. That is what makes any heavy guitar-based song. Yes, I am talking to you, Iron Maiden. Bruce Dickinson is in the best singing shape of his life, and he's like 400 years old, and your riff well is totally dried up, Adrian Smith and Steve Harris. So come on, get with it.
Speaking of angry lyrics.
Yeah, but I digress. No, I love the clean guitar tone on this and mixed with the bass, and when it goes into the power synth sound, they double that power synth with the heavy guitar, the dan 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 dan, 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 you know, it almost has kind of that Tool feel to it, but it's got the keyboard on top of it. And then Jordan does a very cool solo where he ends up harmonizing with himself throughout almost the whole thing. I think he's got what sounds like possibly three different keyboard parts going at once, and those are awesome. And then Petrucci comes in and he's sort of counterpointing that on top. And there's nothing about the song I don't like. And maybe it is underrated. I don't know how often this one ever even considers getting played, but probably of all the songs on this album that I would love to see live, this might be number one, I would think.
Yep. I've seen this one live, and again, it ended up on Portnoy's instructional DVD, and it was from Tinley Park, Illinois, and it was on the Gigantour. And it was the only song I saw of theirs because me and my buddy were driving to Chicago for the Gigantour, specifically to see Dream Theater. And there was a fatality on the highway.
Oh.
There was an accident. And we were backed up for hours to the point where we had given ourselves obviously a few hours to – we were backed up so long that we got to the show in time to hear only – Honor Thy Father. And I went, oh good, it's Honor Thy Father. There's no way they're ending the show with this. And they play a song like, all right, thanks for Dream Theater, good night. And I was like, son of a bitch. Like,
well, not to change the subject, but I saw them in Cleveland on that tour.
I did
and
too.
What Megadeth, okay, well then we were probably, but anyways, so they were flip-flopping who would close the show or who was headlining. Well, Megadeth was headlining that night, if I remember right.
Yeah.
So Dream Theater only played an hour. So if you go watch Dream Theater for an hour, you're only going to get five songs.
Yeah.
And I promised myself I will never, ever go see Dream Theater where they're on a package tour like that, because I'm only going to see my favorite band for four or five songs.
Right.
Because I was there for Dream Theater, not Megadeth. So.
Yep. That was. Yeah. That I'll never forget because Tinley Park was on Friday. And Cleveland was on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember some guy in the front row, like not Dream Theater really, but Dillinger Escape Plan was playing. And I'm just not a fan of that band. But
no,
their singer
either.
Is this enormous, ripped, muscular guy. Some front row dude just hocked a big ass loogie on him. And the singer just stopped and was like yelling at this guy. And I'm thinking, you know what, man? Like, if you're going to spit on anybody, on this tour. That guy's probably the very last one that I would be spitting on.
Right.
Like, I mean, you don't even have to wonder if the guy's in shape or not. Like, he's shirtless and he's got a six pack. He looks like a weightlifter, and you're going to hock on the guy. Like, you can't be promised this guy's not going to get down and just smash you into the barrier. Like,
right. Right.
So, but yeah, I, to your point, Brian, I wonder how often they do consider playing this live, because this one would kick ass. This song is one of those ones, like, it just does not stop. There's, you know, there is no slower moment. There is no, you know, break. No, it's just like, it just goes. It just absolutely goes. It's basically like, you know, you said, you know, like a middle finger, you know, it's absolutely a middle finger, man.
Well, I do kind of wonder, these songs, I think we sort of touched on this once in a while, but these songs that were super personal to Portnoy lyrically, you know, now that he's not in the band, you know, those are probably the type of songs that they stay away from throwing in the set, you know, and I don't know if they have thoughts on, you know, do they look at that sort of aspect of it? Like, well, should we play, you know, this was really Mike's, you know, baby, so super personal to him. Is it going to translate as well? You know what I mean? I don't know if that runs through their head. It'd be an interesting question to, like, ask the band on some of this stuff, you know?
Yeah, that's weird. What do you think about that, Tommy? Like, I can't imagine, like, not taking away from your point, Brian, but I can't imagine that they dive that deep into it. But maybe they do. I mean, what do you think, Tommy?
I don't know, because I've seen them play live and do some of Mike's recovery. What did he call it?
The 12-step suite.
So, you would think that they would stay away from those more so than Honor Thy Father. I mean, if they're going to go that route with him, with his alcoholism recovery, or wherever you want to call it, you'd think that they'd go ahead and just, you know, this song's not quite as personal as what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Well, I mean, on the self-titled tour, they played Shattered Fortress. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they played the final step of the suite. So, I don't know, Brian. You're right, Brian. That would be a great question to ask them. Like, if we can ever, you know, get enough, you know, enough pull to get one of the guys on, like, okay, do you pick songs because of this? Like, we'll have to remember that one. That'll be our first question. Hey, thanks for coming on the show. Yeah. Do you pick songs based on whether or not it's personal to Portnoy?
well, like Best of Time. Okay, let's just say Best of Times. I can't possibly see them playing that.
Yeah,
one.
No.
That would just be that would just be weird, I guess, is the only word I can think of.
Yeah. That might be the only one I could see, honestly, because that one is, hey, this is me singing about my dad. Like,
right.
I mean, man, that's hard. Yeah, I don't know. That's a good point. Well, honestly, if we ever get one of the guys on, especially Petrucci, we got to ask that. Like, we definitely need to ask that question. I did have a couple extra notes on Honor Thy Father. I really wish I could clearly hear each of those movie quotes at the end of the song. There's a whole bunch of, I would love to hear them, like, isolated.
Yeah, what are the movies? Do you know?
I actually don't, and I should have looked that up. I meant to, and I forgot to. So if somebody in the comments knows what movies they're pulling from, let us know.
There is a video on YouTube that somebody has put the song and put the movie clips in there with the song.
Oh, nice.
Really?
Yes. I saw it several years ago. Yes. I can't remember what. I just stumbled upon it.
I didn't do enough show research.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's in the book, I think, but yeah.
Yeah, there is a video on YouTube. Yeah.
Well, my last note, Brian, I'm sure you'll agree with me on this one. The way the unison solos on the keys build at the end, it's just that it's like there's like one, then there's two, then there's three, and it's going like, oh my God, is that badass?
Yep.
That is, you know, that is just incredible. Like I said, the parts on this record where Jordan does get to kind of step out, he makes sure, like, you're going to remember this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right. So let's move on. I don't think we'll have to take too much time on this one. Track 5, Vacant. My note, a couple of them. I said there's not much here. Fits the vibe of the album. It's cool that they didn't. To me, it's cool they didn't try to lighten things up, because, you know, this would have been the perfect time to kind of be like, okay, well, here's your more typical. But they're like, nope, keeping it dark. even with like a, you know, a 3 minute mm-hmm. little, you know, violin ballad, like you're, it's you're going to be bummed out or angry this whole freaking record. So just deal with it. I also said they did this one for Score, which was an interesting yes. choice to me, because I always thought that Stream of Consciousness would have been better, because I think it doesn't have all the insane prog parts. And if you're working with an orchestra, Stream of Consciousness would have sounded really cool.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of surprised when they busted out, when, you know, when I kind of realized, obviously when you know that they're doing like start of the career to the end of the career type of thing, when they got to Train of Thought, I was thinking, you know, Stream of Consciousness would be a good, would be a good choice here. But then they did, you know, Vacant. And then obviously it's kind of obvious because, you know, it's got a violin and a cello and stuff like mm-hmm. that. So that, but, do you guys have any thoughts on this one? I know it's basically like the, you know, the pee break of the album. It's like,
right.
it's not a bad song, but it's like,
no,
you know, it's just, there's not much there, and it's very mellow. And, yeah. You know.
I skip over it. I hate to say, but that's one of the rare Dream Theater songs that I do skip over.
Yeah. What about you, Brian?
I have a theory that Jordan like locked the studio door and like kidnapped some like string players in the Brie and had like some submachine guns. So I said, all right, no one's coming in here.
Yeah.
I'm getting to direct right. and play and do all this. I don't need your tuned down 12, 14 string guitar, you know, tuned down to low B flat Petrucci to play on this one, you know.
it was the Andy Dufresne playing the record in the warden's office.
Right.
Brutus, open up.
Yeah.
Brutus, open up.
Yeah, I can't figure out this song at all. I don't it makes no sense at all why it's on here. I actually don't mind it as a piece of music, you know, but you're just like, what is this even doing on here? I have no clue. Like, there's maybe two or three songs they've ever done that they put on an album, and I'm just like, I don't know what the purpose is here.
Right.
See, I will disagree with you there. Like, I, even though I'm not, it's not like something I actively seek out to listen to, I completely see the purpose of it, because you've just been slapped in the face, you know, for what, like a good 30, 35 minutes with just like heaviness and heaviness and heaviness. Like, you got to catch your breath somewhere. Or else the record basically becomes a little bit suffocating, I think would be the word. Like, if you're just like, heavy, 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 you know? Like, you got to be like, all right, like I say, like, you know, like I use the term pee break. Like, you gotta have a piss break, dude, you know? So that's your piss break. That's your moment to take a breath. That's, you know, just kind of take a second, and then they're going to get back into it, you know. So,
but if like Tommy says, you're just going to skip right over it, then what's the point? You know what I mean? Like, it's not really serving right. its function, I don't think.
Right. Yeah.
But we're not saying everyone skips over it, so you don't know. Right. There's some people probably like, maybe they do. Like, they just want to hear an album start to finish, and like, sweet, I got 3 minutes. I'm just going to go in there and smoke a cigarette or something.
Well,
like,
I guess if you want,
the background.
I guess if you want to have a candlelight dinner with your wife.
Yeah.
But you want to hear some Dream Theater, that would be a good song to play. I mean, I don't know. I mean,
hey, look at Rock and Roll Podcast coming to the rescue. The movie clips, 1999 movie Magnolia. There's clips from Ordinary People, 1980, At Close Range, 1986, and The Royal Tenenbaums, 2001. No kidding.
Hmm.
All right. Well, thank you for that, man. That's cool. I always wondered, like, because I try to listen, like, when I did another listen today, and I was trying to like really pay attention to that and see, can I recognize any of these? And I didn't. So
it's always great when another podcast knows more about Dream Theater than the Dream Theater podcast. That makes for some great viewing and listening.
Rock and Roll just showed up, like, I'm gonna get him at one. I'm gonna promote my. I know he's gonna bring me up on the screen, and I'm gonna show him up and promote my own podcast.
Nicely done, sir.
Yeah, well played. All right, so moving on to the instrumental of the album, the much maligned by Brian Hendrickson, Stream of Consciousness. You, sir, are going to lead this off because you have crapped on this. When we have talked about Dream Theater instrumentals, you have really crapped on this one. So answer for your crimes.
I like two parts of this song, that cool, moody piano thing that happens somewhere roughly in the middle, and the final 3 minutes where we talked before, it's like a Bach almost type theme with a harpsichord synth deal that finishes out the song. I liked it. The rest of it, it just, I think they're just milking something that just doesn't feel like it's there to me to be milked that long.
Okay. Tommy?
And again, it's an instrumental. I'll listen to it, but I just can't get into it. Just can't get into it because it's, you know, like I said, instrumental. I mean, of any of their instrumentals, I probably like this one the most, but I just can't. Without vocals, I just can't get into it.
Oh, throw out some fighting words. Did you just say of their instrumentals, this is your favorite one? Might be.
Yes.
Wow. All right, Brian. I will. Why don't you guys put the gloves on and I'll back off. All right. So
nothing will ever top Dance of Eternity. That's not physically, mentally, or anything else possible.
All right, guys. You have fun. Let's see. Oh my God. Yeah. Brian is basically on the opposite end of the spectrum, Tommy. Like when the instrumentals have come up on previous episodes, this is basically, I think, pretty much, if not officially, last place for him. So
it's just too long.
Yeah.
You know, I can handle a great instrumental that's 4 or 5 minutes, but man, it you better just be blowing me away for the whole 10 or 11 or 12 minutes or whatever this one is. It might even be longer than that. It's like I said, I do love the final 3 minutes. I think it's a very cool stuff. What's going on with the keyboards there.
Right.
But it's just too long.
Gibson Les Paul agrees with you guys. He says it's their worst instrumental. Not agreeing with you on that one, Tommy, but their worst instrumental. It's too long, too boring, and the beginning sounds a lot like Orion.
Yes, I totally agree with that. It does sound like Orion.
You know, it does. It does.
I will completely disagree with all three of you.
No, get out of here, you.
Dude, I don't hear any Orion in this. I just don't. I guess if you're talking about the down picking, like, you know, Orion's like dead and dead, you know, and I guess in the down picking up, but the chords are so different, and you know, the busyness of the drums, you know, it's not really busy, but it's like, you know, it's going, you know, some pickups on the hi hat, stuff like that. Like I don't hear it. So, I mean, I'm not going to argue if you say it's their worst instrumental. I don't know. I've never, at some point, Brian, we're going to have to do that show. Rank the instrumentals. Because like, I'm trying to think of like, is there one that I like less than this? And I can't really think of one, but I don't mind this song. Like my notes, I say kind of stock for the first 5 minutes or so. So it is kind of okay. I like the slow part. You know, that's cool when that kicks off. I like that part of it. And then my final note, like, maybe this is what you guys are talking about. Like, it's good, but it's just kind of there. You know? Maybe maybe it was meant to be part of that vacant, it's like a two-song thing to set up, you know, In the Name of God. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, why don't we just jump into In the Name of God? I mean, Tommy, you're the guest host, so we'll let you lead off on the final song of the album. What do you got for In the Name of God? 16 minutes and 43 seconds or something crazy like that?
Yeah, it's an epic.
Yeah.
I just absolutely love the song. You know, saw it live and, you know, picture of the Twin Towers and the planes hitting. And it's an absolute epic as far as I'm concerned. And they have a lot of epics. That's probably one of the biggest ones.
Yeah, this is one of those ones, Brian, that you and I have talked about. Like, this is a rare one because it's almost 17 minutes long, but it doesn't get crazy proggy in any one spot. Like, not like all the busy stuff that usually the really long stuff has to keep your attention. This one doesn't really have those moments, and yet it still keeps your attention for that much time. That's always been fascinating to me about this song, is that it's like, it's just kind of like, it rocks so hard. It's like the one song they have. Yeah. Don't be vomiting on camera. it's like, it's that one song. Like, it doesn't rely on the musicality and, you know, the progressiveness and all that kind of stuff. Like, it basically, it's just it's rocking and grooving and moving so much that you're really into it because you're just kind of like getting into it, you know,
right.
And it's just, it's got that really cool kind of, you know, it's a slow groove, but not too slow. It's awesome. I mean, Brian, if you're done, he's not done dying. I was going to ask him what's up. He thankfully muted himself. So,
sorry, I think I'm partially dying here. Yeah, I ran out of booze and water.
Well, remember, we have a show rule: no death live on air.
That's right.
Save that for the replays.
Right. You know, this is going to be a bucket list DT song for me. I'd love to see this played live.
Yeah.
This is just like you said. There is no kind of totally insane prog parts. The ultimate irony in this song is that we have hardly had any of Jordan Rudess at all. And what are the last 2 to 3 minutes? It's just the piano with the big string orchestral choir type sounds, you know, modulating into, you know, John, we call the grand finale, the majestic ending, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. And Jordan gets his fanfare and we end out on all that piano and awesome keyboard stuff. And it's just a really well constructed song. That, you know, it doesn't really necessarily feel like it's 17 minutes because it grooves around enough. It's got, once again, you got that Middle Eastern pedaling, you know, riffing kind of minor key vibe, you know, and it's just a great song. And a little bit of those, you know, Tool elements, those little turnarounds and stuff. But this is a great song. It's a great ending to this album, I think, and especially the way it just capitulates at the end with the piano and keyboards.
Yeah. I was thought so too. Like, I mean, Tommy, you saw this tour, so, it was an awesome show closer because you get the end like, whoa, and the people doing the hands like that was so cool. Like, it's like that perfect ending to, like, it's a great album ender. It's a great ending to the show. Like, I mean, again, you know, back to my earlier point, they laid this album out so well. It's just arranged so perfectly. I think it's probably their most well thought out track listing, I would say, in the entire catalog. I want to get your guys' opinion on something. One of my favorite things they have ever done. That bumblebee, I call it the bumblebee part. Where they're both doing just like the trills and it's going up. Like, the first time I heard that, I was like, oh my God, that's awesome. That's awesome. Like, I mean, where do you guys stand on it?
And then it stops and Portnoy does that fill. Yeah. I love that. Love it.
Yeah. Brian, that's gotta be something for you. That's gotta be a big one for you. Like that.
Oh yeah. I love that part. You're just like, all right, how many extra notes are on this keyboard and this guitar? How many frets are on this thing? Cause it gets so high up there. You're like, you think the thing is just going to completely like self combust or something.
Yep.
But yeah, that's a very cool part of the song.
It's always fun to watch it on live at Budokan because it shows Petrucci and he's like, it's literally just a 3-fret thing. And then when he does the harmony at the very end, he goes all the way up and it's like, how are your fingers fitting in that little space, man? Like, that is one of my all time favorite Dream Theater, like key and guitar parts, man. I also think, you know, dude, the main groove of the song, I think because it's a long song. Again, it's not overly proggy and stuff, but people kind of get into like the message of it. It's like kind of like they focus on it as a whole. I kind of think the main riff and that groove kind of gets overlooked sometimes when people talk about this song, like because they're talking about other aspects of it. At least when I've talked with other fans, they don't really come back to the fact that is just, you know, it's, you know, about to drop an F bomb, but effing awesome. That is just a, you know, and at the, you know, again, album closer, when you come to it, the end of the record, and you're just doing this, like, like, that's amazing. Like, it's just perfectly placed. It's, you know, the perfect tempo. It's just, you know, hey, you just heard Dream Theater at the most metal. So let's just rock to the end. You know, like, I love that riff, man. It's like, it just, this song moves. And I think and I noticed this today, when they go back into that, you know, going back into it after that little solo section and stuff, like late in the song, it comes in that's really brutal. I mean, and you could tell that Portnoy sped it up a little bit. I mean, there's some energy in that, you know, and it's like, you know, the little the harmonic, and it's, you can just tell he's like rocking a little more. It's like, it's, you know, you could tell the band even feels that energy, just like,
live, cool. Live, Portnoy stands up on that part too, and he is beating the hell out of the cymbals.
Yep, I was just about to bring that up. I'm so glad you mentioned that. It's one of those times when he stands up and he's like, you know, doing the double hand at the end. Yeah, good point. Yeah, I just, you know, the only thing, if I had any complaints about this song, like, I mean, do you guys have anything that you, like, any complaints about this song? Like, I have a very minor one.
No, I think it's perfect.
Okay.
I think you could still probably shorten it a couple minutes. Still get the same point across, you know, but it doesn't feel, it's not one of those, you know, where we talked before where, man, it just feels way too long. You know, I feel like there's enough. I like the groove and the main riffs enough. And to me, if I like the groove and the main riff enough of a song, you go ahead and take it out 17 minutes, as long as you splice in just, you know, enough little tasty little bits here and there.
Yeah. The note that I have is I think that the outro might be a hair long. It's like, I feel like that's one of those outros, like when they did kind of like the long outro with like Scenes from a Memory. Okay, you're ending a concept album. So to have like a long, drawn out kind of outro, like it's ending an entire record that's a story. Like, so I get that. But I think on this one, that would be the only thing. Like, it just seems like it could be shortened a little bit. I mean, it'd be interesting, Brian, like, see how much you think this song could be shortened. Because I don't think there's like minutes you could shave off. Like, oh, this should only be like a 12-minute song, 11-minute song. But I would say that, I mean, that outro kind of just like, for all we know, though, they may have written that specifically. Like, we're going to close the show with this, so let's extend it because we're going to do like the live thing. Like, so maybe it was like, you know, a deliberate decision. Mm-hmm. I just, when I listen to it, you know, I just kind of think, yeah, that might be, you know, that could be a little bit shorter, you know. So, all right, so there we go. Our deep dive. Do you guys have overall thoughts? I'll go first, and then I'll let you go, Brian. And then Tommy, obviously, it's your favorite record, and you're our guest, so we got to have you know, really like give your full overall thoughts. Mm-hmm. I have just a few. I love that this is just an unbelievably driven guitar oriented record. As an electric guitar fan, I love it. I love that, you know, the production matches, you know, the heavy, stark, brooding kind of vibe of the music. Like, you know, when you buy the thing, and as I said, you know, near the beginning of the show, that they had, you know, in interviews before the record came out, they had said, this is going to be metal, this is going to be heavy. It's like, and then you buy the thing and it's all black and white, everything is, there's no color. And then the music matches that. I've always loved that. It's like, you know, if you're going to go in, go all the way in, man. Like, whole hog. Like, commit to it. And they damn sure did. And I love that. You know, the production is dry. It's very crunchy and crisp and just aggressive and kind of obnoxious in a way. And again, the artwork matches the music. And I love that part of it. And the other thing that I have, to me, this has always been the angry album. You know, the lyrics, there's no, you know, I love you, Dad. There's no uplifting this, there's that. Like, no, it's just like, you know, it's, you know, that meme of like the little cartoon guy where it's like middle finger upon middle finger. Mm-hmm. Like, that's kind of like what this record always has always been to me. It's, this is just kind of like Dream Theater's FU album. And something about that I really like, because there's always so many different flavors to the Dream Theater catalog. And this one, they're just like, nah, we like metal. And we're pissed off about a lot of stuff. I mean, you know, as I am, you know, John Petrucci wrote the lyrics, and a lot of them are about Mike Stone from Queensryche trying to give him guitar tips on the previous tour. It's like, you know, you cannot touch the way I play. You know, it's even right in the lyrics. You know, it's like, we're like, what the, you're Mike Stone, dude. Like, you play like grunge rock chordal stuff. Like, what are you trying to tell John Petrucci? Like, who the hell are you? And John Petrucci wrote that. Like, you know, what the F, dude? So I've always loved just the anger and the obnoxiousness and the in-your-face, you know, brutality of this record on all fronts. So, Brian, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, so to your point about that, this is what they wanted to do. So I guess they achieved their ultimate goal, which is to make this brutal, heavy album. What do we have a total of? There's only seven songs, right? I'll take four of them. I'll want to hear live. The other three, I don't have a lot of interest in. You know, that's still like 60% almost. If you get 60% off of a lot of albums, you know, that have great songs, that's fine. For Dream Theater, that's a little bit low for my taste. But, you know, it is what it is. I understand why people like this album. And I also understand why people like me probably, you know, it's going to be more towards the bottom end. You know, I just want to hear more of those big, well, those big melodic hooks vocally and, you know, more of those big sort of soaring guitar melodic type things. And I wish we had just a little bit more of those in some of the songs, but the four that I do like, I like a lot.
Awesome. All right, Tommy, this is your favorite record.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the floor for as long as you want. Tell us your overall thoughts about Train of Thought.
Well, in my opinion, because Dream Theater is my favorite band, they can do no wrong. Everything they've ever done, I love. But this album just shows their metal side 1,000%. And I actually miss that. I want to see, I mean, they still have that metal edge to them, but they haven't had it as much as they have with this album. I wish they would come out with a Train of Thought 2 or something, come out with another album like this. I want to hear more aggressive metal type Dream Theater like this album. But other than the two songs that, you know, I think that are okay, the other ones just make up for it. The album is good front to back. I have all their CDs. I have all their DVDs. I have all their live stuff. This album I have listened to, I bet you, 100 times. I just cannot. I always go back to it. Always. It's either that one or Scenes from Memory. Those are my two favorite, but, this one, I just always seem to go back to it. And I, like I said, I just can't get enough of it. I probably listen to a couple of songs off that CD probably once a week. I mean, I just can't get enough of it.
That's awesome. So where do you rank the heaviness of Distance Over Time against this one? Because I feel like Distance Over Time, in terms of like being a heavy album, it's definitely not like as, you know, destructive as this one. But I think it's kind of up there. Like, where do you stand, you know, the Distance Over Time versus Train of Thought in terms of heaviness? Like, how do you think they compare?
Well, Train of Thought is, to me, a whole lot heavier than Distance Over Time. Distance Over Time is the heaviest Mike Mangini era album.
Okay.
As far as I'm concerned. But as far as heaviness, I don't think he can get any heavier than Train of Thought. 6 Degrees did have its moments. I mean, Glass Prison, really, you know, extremely heavy. But then you go to the second song, Blind Faith, and, you know, they kind of lost a little bit. But as far as heaviness, I don't think Dream Theater has not made another album as heavy as this one, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay.
This is, I think the unique thing about this album, and John might agree with this, I think this is one of those albums where, you know, people that are like just serious hard rock and metal guys will be like, man, I don't like Dream Theater at all, but Train of Thought, I love that album.
Yeah.
And I think there's plenty of people that are like in that camp, and that's cool because that's ultimately, you know, probably was their goal, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's like almost the ultimate compliment to Dream Theater is people that go, you know, actually, I really don't like the band. I don't like the rest of the catalog, but I love Train of Thought.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was, to me, it's always been interesting because like they, you know, they said they wanted to write their classic heavy metal album. They were like, you know, Iron Maiden has, you know, Number of the Beast and Metallica has Master of Puppets. Like, we want to write our classic, you know, metal album. And I don't think they achieved it because obviously it's not heralded in that class. But I think in terms of the Dream Theater catalog itself, I think they absolutely nailed it. Because if you're just like, we're going to write the heaviest goddamn Dream Theater record we possibly can, oh, they succeeded. I mean, like mm-hmm. I say, this album to me is like very, it just never lets up. There's a certain mood to this album, and it's just, it doesn't stop. There are no light moments on this. You know, that's why, you know, I'm weird in this. Like, I always like, I'm like, you know, I took a ton, almost cursed. I took a ton of art classes in high school and into college and stuff like that. So like, I kind of see things from an artistic perspective at times. And I've always been one of those people that like kind of like ties the album art to the music itself. And sometimes it doesn't mesh. Sometimes it does. And this is one of those albums that for me, above almost any other, where the album art definitely looks exactly like the music sounds. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, when I first grabbed the album, and again, I knew it was going to be really heavy. So, but when I picked this thing up and it's just all black and white, I immediately was like, man, that's pretty, you know, like I used the word earlier, bleak. I'm like, okay. And then the album starts out and it's like, you could tell it's like, you know, detuned, like seven string stuff. And then, like I say, like This Dying Soul comes in and you're like, oh my God. And it's like, okay, well, all right. Yep. And then even, you know, Endless Sacrifice, like it just continues. Okay. So basically, again, this is just Dream Theater's, you know, kind of middle finger record. Like, and I just love that. It's, to me, this is, while it's not, you know, at the top of my list of favorite Dream Theater albums, as a cohesive product and what they were going for, this is definitely at the top for me, because they absolutely nailed their ultimate goal to me.
The only other weird thing on this, I think, and I'm sure I'll probably be in the minority, so I'll take the hit now. But you know, I agree on the album cover. I think it's a really strange album title. I don't know. Really? I don't get. You know, it, Train of Thought to me doesn't induce any sense of like heaviness, or you know, unless it's like just a heavy like philosophical type of a thing. But yeah, it's. I don't know. It seems like a weird album title. It always has.
What do you? All right. Where do you stand, Tommy? Because I hate to say it, but I disagree with Brian a little bit on this one. Like, I'm not contrarian on this episode. I promise.
Right. Right. No, I disagree too. I love the title. I love the title.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I think it does say heaviness.
I think just the word train, and maybe it's, I mean, like I grew up in it. My dad was a model train collector, so I grew up like we would go watch trains at 6 o'clock in the morning every Sunday, like, mm-hmm. and I was always around diesels and locomotives and stuff like that. So to mm-hmm. me, when I hear the word train, I think of this big, massive thing just coming down the tracks at speed, you know. Mm-hmm. And so the word train to me, Brian, I immediately was like, yeah, it's like a freaking train. You know, and thought mm-hmm. kind of brings the progressive into it for me. It's like, it's heavy, but it's like there's progressive. You know, it's so to me, I like it. I mean, sorry to disagree again. Like I say, I'm not trying to be a contrarian, but I think it really works.
What about locomotive of thought? No,
diesel of thought,
or like still use train, but like I don't know, gravy train. Maybe that's not quite as heavy sounding.
Yeah, could you imagine they made it? Yeah, gravy train of thought. Like what gravy? Ugh. Like what the f?
No, but yeah, I'm not even just saying that because it's not, you know, just because there are some songs I don't like. Yeah, it's just I don't know. It's always seems weird to me, but obviously okay. It's only I'm the only one out of us three, so I'm not shocked there.
This might be the episode that you and I have absolutely disagreed the most on, and it's. Even though we both kind of like it, like so real quick, I want to bring up a comment, and then I have a question for you, Brian. So Gibson Les Paul says, overall, this album doesn't grab me. I've never thought Dream Theater pull off being heavy very well. In terms of heavy prog, I'll take Everything by Nevermore and the last four Death albums over this any day. I don't know if I would consider Death progressive. I don't really hear much prog in there. Nevermore, maybe. I think they're progressive as in terms of who you're comparing them against, but I would say I don't know that I see them as like overly progressive. Like when I'm thinking progressive, I'm thinking, you know, like Dream Theater, obviously. I'm thinking like Rush, like, and I think Nevermore and Death are not really, again, Death to me is just like, it's death metal. It's like, it, that's a super innovative band. And I don't think it comes anywhere near prog, but I mean, what do you guys think?
Nevermore is a great band. I guess I sort of understand what he's saying in prog, because it's a real sophisticated guitar playing going on there, and the chords in the voices. And if you ever see some of the videos of like Loomis or those guys showing how they play that stuff, it's like, forget it, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I disagree in that Dream Theater doesn't pull off heavy. I mean, I think they can pull it off fine.
Yeah.
My complaint, as I've stated since the beginning, is the ultimate Dream Theater is the heavy with the huge, gigantic, you know, choruses and guitar riffs. And I think this album, it probably lacks like true, there's sort of like guitar parts, but I don't think there's those giant like riffs where you're like, oh man, this riff is, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know that many, if you're going to sit down and play a guitar riff on, you know, it might be one of the heavier ones on this, but I think of them more as just kind of parts rather than just these memorable classic riffs. You know what I'm saying?
What? All right, Tommy, respond.
I can't, putting Death and Nevermore in the same vein as Dream Theater. I don't think there's any, even Nevermore and Death. They're two different bands.
That's what, yeah.
So it's hard for me to, you know, it's almost a different genre altogether. I understand what the guy's saying too, but as far as Dream Theater pulling off heaviness, I don't think they have a problem at all.
Yeah.
I don't see them as not as having issues with being heavy.
Yeah. I would think that if you do consider them to not be able to pull off heavy, I think if you see them live, that changes, because, you know, I mean, Tommy, you've seen all the tours, like Brian, I don't know how many you've seen or not seen, but you know, you go back to like stuff like, you know, the tour for Systematic Chaos, when they would do Dark Eternal Night, and they had the cool, like, you know, the anime, like,
right
on the screen and stuff like that. And then we get to the end of the, again. It's like,
yeah,
you had built this song up, and then all of a sudden, like, there's this cool, like, illustration of them in a goddamn tank. Like, this album's making me want to swear, man. Like, this, that's how you know this is heavy. Like, I keep wanting to swear.
Right.
But it's like, it's them in a tank, like, rolling down the street.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
And it's just, and you're just like, you know, and Jordan comes out with the Zen riffer and stuff, and then he's on the continuum and everything. Like, I, you know, Gibson, like, man, I gotta disagree with you. I mean, you make a lot of good points on the show, but I'm gonna disagree with you on that one. I think they pull it off really well. I agree with you, Tommy. I agree with you, Brian. I think there's plenty of those moments where they definitely pull that off.
Well, I wonder too, like, when, and I'm not specifically saying that about Gibson Les Paul, but with people that think that kind of stuff, does it have to do specifically a lot with James LaBrie and his vocal style? I wonder how much that plays into it.
Well, a lot of people have said that his, and there was a comment earlier. Let me scroll up, see if I can actually pull this one up. But someone did mention that it's, you know, his LaBrie's voice is actually, there it is. Yeah, Gibson Les Paul again. He said my two biggest complaints about this album are, one, the kick drums are mixed way too loud. I'll disagree with that, Tommy. I'm going to side with you as a drummer. When you get a bass drum kicking you in the face, I'm totally fine with that.
Yes, yes.
And my in ear mix when I sing with my band, like, I've got all kinds of kick drum because I just love when it, you know. And number two, he says James's voice is not suited for crushing metal and it sounds out of place. I will go back to my point about the bullhorn vocals, and I think that's why they did that. So I can't, Gibson, I can't say that you're wrong in saying that, but I don't think it's out of place. You know, I think LaBrie's solo records prove that. I mean, I don't know if you've ever heard those, Tommy, but the LaBrie solo records.
I have them. So yeah,
they're amazing, and I think that proves he can definitely do that. I don't think there's necessarily a voice that's, you could say that's like, oh, you can't put that over heavy metal, unless you're talking about like Prince or something when he's singing Kiss, and then you put it over a blast beat. Like, okay, that's, you know.
Right.
But yeah, I just think there's so many heavy moments that I can't get on board with the they can't pull off heavy. You know, so I don't know. All right, so man, this has been great. So Brian, final thoughts.
Final thoughts. I do have a new appreciation for this album. I will definitely go back and listen to those four songs a lot more than I ever did in the past, especially three of them. I always had As I Am as one of my go-tos. But, yeah, new appreciation for three of the other tunes. I still think some weak stuff on here. And not my favorite Dream Theater album, but there definitely are some cool moments.
My final question that I wanted to ask you, did you end up enjoying this album more, having to listen to it a bunch? Because I know in previous episodes you're like, yeah, I'm not really into this one. And so did you, because you changed your mind on albums previously on the show. So.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, you know, it helped. I mean, it definitely helped. I mean, I'm on record when we had the idea to do this show that, you know, I kind of jumped back on the bandwagon. You know, when Mangini got in the band, I sort of really got interested. I love Dramatic Turn of Events. I loved everything since then. You know, so I had to kind of go back and some of the stuff that I was, you know, sort of on the fence before and really dive into it. And I do have an all new appreciation.
Awesome. I will give mine, and Tommy, as the guest host, I'll let you close it out. I had not re-listened to this album in quite a while. Like, it's, I really like it, but it was never one, like, if I'm going to go listen to Dream Theater, I'm going to go to Train of Thought. Like, I hadn't done that. And as I was listening to it, I was like, man, why don't I go back to this more? Like, you know, as I said at the top of the show, this was the last time when I was really, like, I got a Dream Theater record and the whole thing. I was like, yeah, like, immediately I was like, cool. You know, I didn't have to be like, oh, let me listen to that again. Like, I there's parts I like, parts I wonder about. Like, this was an immediate listen. And so to me, it was kind of surprising I didn't go back to it a lot. And going back to it, I was like, yeah, man, this is great. And especially listening to it in headphones, you know, when you can really hear, like, you know, Jordan doing the dirty organ, the dirty pig. And it's actually kind of like, wah. He does this like wah stuff on some of it, like just to try and stand out a little bit. I thought that was awesome. I'd never noticed that before, just listening in the car or in my room or something, you know, my man cave. And I think, you know, this is just a really underrated record for me. And I really liked listening to it again because I was like, oh, man, yeah, this man. I remember why this hit me immediately when I listened to it when it came out. And it was a total blast for me to revisit this record because it was like kind of like, you know, it was like finding something again. And I love that. It was like, oh, man, like, why don't I go back to this more? So it was fun. And I really like this record. When we eventually get into ranking the albums, which Tommy, you'll have to be on because I think, Brian, it'd be a good idea to have all of our guest hosts and we do a here's our ranking, you know, one to whatever.
Yeah.
You'll have to come on. I this would definitely be in the higher half of my rankings, I think. So, Tommy, you have been an amazing guest host. Thank you so much for having me on. Anytime. Thanks. So, all right, close it out with your final thoughts on Train of Thought.
Well, I've said it probably 100 times during this show that just love the album. And when I bought Once in a Lifetime and went back and started buying all the older albums, and then I got to this album, it was everything that I was waiting on them to do. I was like, come on, just please. I mean, you're coming out with these songs with this heavy edge. Now give me an album that's nothing but heavy. And they did it. And I just cannot get enough of this album.
That's awesome, man. Well, thanks. Thanks again for coming on, man. Yep. Like, it was amazing. Like, I know we talked about this at your brother's show when I saved him during Don't Stop Believing.
All right.
So
he did. Yeah.
I'll have to tell you that story off air, Brian. That's right. A funny one. But Got to thank Gibson Les Paul for jumping in again. Rock and Roll Podcast, thank you so much for hanging out. Tommy Molinas with the kind words tonight. Thank you very much. Any of you guys like you know that are not commenting, thanks for checking out another episode. Remember, we are live at talkingintoinfinity.com and the CMSnetwork.com every other Thursday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you would like to listen to the audio version of the show, if you have not caught us live, just go to wherever you find your podcast and just Google Talking Into Infinity. You will find us there. So, you know, much appreciated for all you guys for the support and everything like that. Till next time, I'm your host, John. For Brian and for Tommy, carpe diem, y'all. We will see you on the next episode in 2 weeks. See ya.